then the other factor that should not be neglected is that the labor market has gotten to be a much more difficult place for people without, you know, moderate to high levels of education. And most people who are on the disability system, the vast majority, or at least a substantial majority, are people without education beyond high school. And typically they're, you know, mid-career or older workers who have limited formal education, and they get displaced from the workforce, and they turn to disability as a last resort. And that's why the program grows so rapidly when the unemployment rate spikes, as it has done over the last several years. So the combination of a program that is essentially becoming more valuable due to the rising value of medical care, and more accessible due to the liberalizations made by Congress, with a labor market that's becoming less and less forgiving, lower real wages for low-skill workers, fewer opportunities, and, in fact, less likelihood of getting health insurance, all that makes the disability program look a lot more of a good option for many people.
Before I go on, I want to ask one more technical question. A friend of mine, a doctor in the St. Louis area, works in a hospital in a relatively low-income area, and he would tell me that a lot of people come in complaining of back pain and other disorders, quote, hoping to get on disability. What role does a doctor have in that process?
Well, quite an important role, actually, because the Social Security Administration is bound by law, again, this is Congress's decision in 1984, to give sort of first weight to the evidence provided by the disability claimant's own medical counsel. So although the Social Security Administration does contract to get what's called a consultative examination for each applicant, it actually has to give is required by law to take more seriously the evidence provided by the claimant than by its own consultants, and only in cases where it has reason to believe that the claimant is distorting the information does it have the right to ignore it. So there's a very powerful kind of for-profit advocacy component to getting people onto SSDI. So there's many law firms that specialize just in this practice, and they work, you know, with counselors and physicians and so on to build a strong case to support an individual's application. So, you know, there's a well-known firm based out of New York called Binder & Binder that alone, I think, received more than $20 million in 2010 in payments from the Social Security Administration for claims brought against it by plaintiffs, or for claimants, just to clarify how that works.
Yeah.
Essentially, if you apply for disability benefits, if you're denied, you appeal either once or twice, and eventually your case goes up to an administrative law judge. And at that point, if you win the case, you get your back benefits. If you're represented by counsel, your counsel gets 25% of those back benefits, up to about $6,000.
By law?
By law, yeah. That contract is structured to protect claimants from, you know, paying higher
more
fees.
Than 25.
Exactly. So, yeah. They, in other words, they don't want them selling their cases, you know, saying, well, you can have 90% of my benefits if you just get me something.
I don't know how to react to that. That's special, you know.
So the Social Security Administration each year pays more than $1 billion directly to attorneys that prevail against it on behalf of claimants.